Haley, do you have a climate weak spot, like the thing you do that you feel guilty about?
Oh, yeah, like it's not even, I don't even have to think about it. I already know the one. I fly too much. It's the worst. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm good about my diet. I feel like I'm good about the gas that I use and my appliances are electric, but my family lives far away.
Yeah.
And so I mean, like we're talking easily 4 round trips per year because I'm also in my 20s and everybody's getting married.
Yes,
so I always have to go far away. And it's not because I don't know how bad it is. Yeah.
Just some guilt there.
I feel a lot of guilt. Yes.
I do fly not that much. I do fly once a year, sometimes twice. Now that I'm working on very local issues, I'm not flying around so much. So I don't have that issue. But it's surprising, though, because passenger air travel is something less than 3% of global emissions, something like that. So I suppose it's because most people never get on a plane.
Yeah, I think that's it. And I mean, that's surprising here because in the U.S., the vast majority of us have flown before in our lives sometime.
And that's just one of the reasons Americans pollute more per capita than anybody else.
Yeah, right. Which is why I'm racked with guilt over this. And so I can really relate to our listener this week because, like her, my family lives all over the country. Her name is Sarah Taymor. She lives in Santa Monica, and she's retired. And she used to work as the district representative for former State Senator Fran Pavley. Her question:
what is the most effective way to offset the greenhouse gas emissions of one's air flights, air travel?
And the reason she wants to know is because she's got grandchildren who live in Arlington, Virginia, and she goes to see them every 3 or 4 months.
You gotta use a plane to get there to see them. So I would like to be able to offset my emissions.
Ooh, offsets can be tricky.
Yeah, I know. And there's a lot of greenwashing that companies do with offsets. So navigating which ones actually do something can be, like you said, yeah, pretty tricky. This is the Anti-Dread Climate Podcast, your practical, personal guide to protecting the planet. I'm Kaylee Wells, climate reporter at KCRW.
And I'm Candace Dickens-Russell, environmental educator and CEO at Friends of the LA River. We should probably start by saying you can never fully undo an action that has a climate impact. If you're deciding what's the most climate-friendly car to buy, for example, the answer is no car.
Right, no car.
So obviously it's harder when there are grandchildren on the other side of the country, though.
Yeah, I know. But just because you want to see your grandchildren doesn't mean there aren't more and less responsible ways for you to get over there. I've got nieces and I need to fly to see them. And they grow so much while I'm gone. So I get, like, I want to be there all the time and I don't want to miss stuff. But, you know, instead of seeing them 3 or 4 times a year like Sarah does, I see them twice a year and I stay for longer. So instead of flying up for like a long weekend and getting to spend like 4 days with them, I will take a week off during their winter or summer break when they have more time to spend with me anyway. So if you spend the same amount of time with them, but you cut your flights from 4 to 2, boom, you've already cut your air travel emissions in half.
Yeah, that's definitely a technique. And then even if Sarah flies less, she's still got to see those grandkids.
Yeah.
So let's help her figure out whether offsetting emissions is even an option. And when we talk about offsets, we're talking about doing something or paying somebody else to do something that's good for the planet that removes carbon from the air. So planting a tree that absorbs carbon, for example, offsets something that spits out carbon.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, airlines or other carbon-emitting endeavors, like buying something on the internet that gets shipped to you, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes those companies will let you check a box that says, I want to offset this flight. So when you're checking out, you might pay like an extra little fee and that'll just get added to the cost.
Yeah, sometimes when solutions are that easy, though, I get a little skeptical.
Yeah, right. I know, me too. So to figure out whether that's even worth doing, I talked to Angelo Gurgel. He's an MIT research scientist who studies climate mitigation, including carbon offsets.
And is he pro-offset?
On the whole, yeah, he is.
Offsets are one important part of the equation of trying to move toward a low-carbon world in the future.
So he says the best way to offset carbon is first to reduce carbon emissions in other parts of your life.
You don't need to buy offset from anyone. You just try to find some ways that you change your lifestyle and you'll be able to get your offsets by yourself.
Okay, but Sarah, she's flying all the way to Arlington. So she's going from LAX to Dulles, even on a nonstop flight, which, by the way, always better than multiple flights. fly commercial, fly nonstop, all that. That's a lot to offset.
Yes, you're right. So I know the idea of like, oh, just don't eat meat and then right. you can fly the plane. Probably not going to work. Just to give you a sense of how much, I ran it through a couple of those good old online carbon calculators. So if Sarah flies from LA to DC 4 times per year on just like a regular old 737 mm-hmm. round trip, just the impact of her one seat on one of those flights is like 5 tons of carbon, which according to the Paris Climate Agreement, if we want to reach a sustainable future, are you excited for this number?
I'm afraid.
That is what one person should emit over the course of 2 years.
Okay. No. Okay. So she's not going to offset her flights by like going vegan.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Okay. No. 2 years over the course of 4 flights is not going to work. Mm. It's not even close. But this goes back to my first point. So say she consolidates her trips from 4 to 2, cut the trips in half. Suddenly, we're not trying to do 2 years, trying to offset 2 years of emissions. We're offsetting 1 year.
That sounds okay. So I'm assuming we're going through all these points because checking the offset my flight box when I'm buying a ticket for like $5 extra is not going to move.
That's
the
not
going to
work.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't guarantee it's going to do nothing.
Sure.
But sure. It probably doesn't do what you want it to be doing. Mm-hmm. And if you want to hear it straight from the horse's mouth, check out what Scott Kirby said. So this guy is the CEO of United Airlines. Mm-hmm. United Airlines got some attention because they have the goal of being carbon neutral by 2050 without relying on carbon offsets. Oh. And he says actual actions that happen because you check the box aren't nearly as good as they sound.
Most of that is either saying you're going to plant trees or saying you're not going to cut down trees. And there's nothing wrong with planting trees and saving forests. But the reality is the vast majority of those projects, frankly, are fraud. They are either forests that were never going to be cut down or trees that were going to be planted anyway. And they don't do anything to net change the climate. Almost everyone is using carbon offsets as their simple, easy way to check the box and say, I've done my part for climate change. I'm net zero. They're not. And they haven't done their part. And it's wrong.
So, okay, Kaylee, you're hitting me with a lot of problems, not a lot of solutions.
I know, you're right. Okay, you're right. So I'm just emphasizing the point that you got to change the mindset that you can just offset the carbon and instead you need to more think about like making less carbon, emitting less carbon from on the first place. But there are legitimately good-meaning people doing helpful carbon offsetting projects out there that are helping the planet and that need financial support to get started or keep moving. The trick is finding the right ones, says Gurgel.
When you don't have the basic idea what you are buying, right, what kind of project it's behind the offset program, I think I would not be confident to buy that kind of offset.
And also the type of project matters.
Mm-hmm, right. So, like in California, a lot of the ones near us are wildfire, burn scar, plant reforestation projects. Helping reseed the millions of trees that we've lost in the past 2 years. I'd support that because it's good to put trees back where the trees are supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But then there are like gas collection projects where you're capturing the methane from the manure at a cow farm and turning that into electricity, which sounds good, but that's also incentivizing us to make more manure and have more cows to offer more credits when the better thing for the planet is we just need to have fewer cows.
I would suggest people to try to buy those things that they feel compute more, that they like more. So if you think about, if you ask me what kind of projects I like to buy or I'm more enthusiastic about, are the ones that have environmental co-benefits.
And when he says co-benefits, he means having multiple positive impacts. So his favorites are also my favorites. The idea of restoring native habitat to a place that's been disturbed by development, or maybe you're a big fan of creating green jobs, so you want to support a project to build a new solar farm, stuff like that.
Or you're like me and you care about social benefits, so you pay to support tree planting projects in an urban place where there's not enough shade during the summer. So there are a lot of good projects out there to support. And once you've found them, the next big challenge is finding and being able to afford enough of the offset to actually make a dent in your carbon-intense activities.
Yeah, exactly. And there are actually literal websites that are like carbon offset marketplaces. So how effective you want to be at offsetting is also a matter of just how much you're willing to spend.
Great. So let's pare this down to some takeaways. Sarah, what is the most effective way to offset the greenhouse gas emissions from your flights? Try to offset them first with your own habits. That's the best thing you can do. Consolidate flights, eat less beef, bike to the grocery store. The carbon you save there will help offset the carbon you burn on a plane.
And then if you are paying for a carbon offset, You want to invest in carbon offset programs with lots of information, because those vague promises and projects without clear goals or locations mean there's probably a higher risk it's not legitimate.
And finally, invest in projects with co-benefits that you're passionate about, whether that's habitat restoration or social benefits like green job creation. Then your dollar's going further than reducing carbon emissions. Okay, so Kaylee, what's our good news this week?
Okay, so we're going to do a little pivot here. We were talking about air travel. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to talk about land travel.
Okay, nice segue into cars. Let's do it.
Yeah, okay. So the good news is that Teslas aren't the only EVs that are hitting the road now. Mm-hmm. You will soon be seeing more of your Amazon packages or bulk boxes of Lay's chips arrive in an electric truck.
It's electric.
Yeah.
Woogie, woogie, woogie.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. Okay, so as you might know, last year, California mandated that over time, we make a complete switch to emission-free vehicles. And this applies to trucks, too. So you've heard the whole 2035, we're going to ban new gas-powered cars. Well, by 2042, all the trucks need to be emissions-free, too. Oh. So that has sparked this really big increase in the number of electric trucks hitting the road. Out of the 13,000 electric trucks on the road today, mm-hmm. 10,000 of them were added just last year.
Wow. A small number, but growing fast.
Yeah, we love to see those graphs that are like,
A big whoosh, yes.
I will say, we're not talking about semis, though.
Got it. Okay.
Most of these electric trucks are used for local or regional routes, which makes sense since they have up to 250 miles in range. Mm-hmm. But a number of drivers of middle-sized trucks told the Washington Post they actually really prefer the EVs. They say it's a lot easier and they're smoother to drive. The vehicle rocks less. Mm. The motor's quiet. There's assisted steering. I mean, hello.
Wow.
One driver told the Post the difference between EVs and diesel trucks is like a ballerina versus a college wrestler.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah.
So you think we'll see more electric trucks doing the FedEx routes or whatever?
Yeah, right. Yeah, so look for those. Amazon has ordered thousands from the EV maker Rivian.
Nice.
And then here in Southern California, in fact, FedEx is using them now, and there are dozens on the road so far.
Cool. That's it this week for the Anti-Dread Climate Podcast. If you haven't, please subscribe to this podcast and share it with a friend. Go ahead and ask us a question at kcrw.com/climate.
Next week, we're helping you navigate the rebates.
I'd love to know what kind of rebates and incentives are available from federal, state, local, maybe even utility companies as far as improving our home potentially with solar, heat pump, whatever else we can do to be more friendly to the earth.
I'm Candace Dickens-Russell, environmental educator and CEO at Friends of the LA River.
I'm Kaylee Wells, climate reporter at KCRW. Our executive producer is Sonia Geis. Our production assistant is Celine Mendiola. Technical director is Nick Lamponi. And our music is by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs. The Anti-Dread Climate Podcast is a KCRW production.